The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in this morning, we appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, back from vacation once again, in case you missed it yesterday. In the hizzy.
Yeah.
Barcarada.
Let's go. Let's
the Mirage. You did a fine job last night in finding some props that we're going to go through today. DraftKings has something called the Drive for 5 in the NFL. It is essentially matchup bets with a tie thrown in.
Drive for Week 5. I kept doing that same thing, too. I might have written it down on the rundowns differently. Drive for 5.
Drive for Week 5. Drive, right? We should be clear. I'm sorry. I should be clear.
Drive I did the same thing.
By the way, it shouldn't be Drive for Week 5 either. It should be Drive through Week 5.
Yes, you are correct. Drive for Week 6.
Yes. So, we're off to a fine start this morning.
Yeah, sorry, DraftKings. We're trying to promote it.
You were trying to promote it. Anyway, DraftKings did this great thing where they have a – it's called Drive for Week 5. What it is essentially a matchup between two NFL teams with a tie thrown in, right? It's a three-way. And they put up they put up 12 different one of these or 6 different? I think it's 12. No, it's 6.
I was also looking at a different,
6 different ones.
Yeah, I was also looking at a different state last night. I realized I had more options than what I had showed you originally. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go through a bunch of these today because I believe that you have landed on something that is so bettable.
I'm with you. I mean, it's sad. I know we match on one of them, but like it was as soon as I sat down, the first one I looked at, I'm like, I'd bet this. Right now, if it was available to me.
That's exactly right. And you hit on a point also, which is we don't have the ability to bet DraftKings here in Nevada. DraftKings is not in this jurisdiction. So not like we can influence it. This is one of these where, you know, oftentimes, you know, we go through props that are available where we can't bet them because they're not in Nevada. And we say, we're very honest, though, yeah, we probably wouldn't bet it even if we were there or not. These we would absolutely bet. So we'll get to those momentarily.
Yeah, I think I found 3. That I would bet.
I found 2 for sure, and like the other 4,
right?
Kind of wanted to also.
Like I've got 3, I think I would bet, and probably 2 more that are heavy leans one way for me.
Oh, we gotta go through all of them. We'll do that. Drew Dinsick will join us here as well. Paul Spohr will join us. Paul Carr, more soccer today. Let me get this straight, Kelly. I have a question for you. So,
again.
How many goals did Romelu Lukaku score so far?
0.
Now, does he have any games moving forward to add to that total?
0 moving forward.
So that's unfortunate, right? That's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, that's bad.
Okay.
At least you guys went with the long shot bet of Golden Boot. I just had him to lead his own team in scoring, which he's not going to have accomplished.
Soccer. Paul Carr later on the show.
USA with a fine performance last night. God, that was a gross game.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
Fell asleep at halftime.
Yeah.
Fell asleep at halftime.
I feel like I watched a lot of soccer yesterday, and boy, it was brutal. There was not much scoring either in Europe or in Copa America. a lot of officiating.
Well, this is what
outrage,
I want to talk about.
Right, in the U.S. game last night that I don't even fully understand.
Oh,
right?
I think I like it for the half that I saw, not to get all Tony Kornheiser that I like fell asleep at halftime. I don't know what happened, but that referee. And again, we are not the biggest soccer experts in the world, but it was clear to everyone, the announcers, the halftime crew, that he had multiple, to say questionable is an understatement. Yeah. There was the yellow card. He's going to put up the yellow card, and he let play resume.
He let play continue, I should say. Yes, that was bizarre.
And then there was a handball where the Americans had an advantage, and he whistled it dead.
I don't know if I remember the last time a broadcast was as open about blasting a referee during a match like that last night. I mean, it was over and over again.
Yeah, I'm just mentioning too. There's more. Paul Carr will get into that coming up. First though, because I know.
And then I caught a video this morning where I guess Pulisic, who was angry the whole game about it, but he went up to shake all the refs' hands after the game, and the guy snubbed him.
The guy snubbed
Pulisic,
him.
Pulisic put his hand out to shake him. The guy snubbed him.
It's amazing. First, though, some NBA news. You said some Donovan Mitchell news this morning, real quick.
Yes, we do. Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs have agreed to a max extension, 3 years, $150 million. So he had 1 year left on his contract. There was a lot of discussion of whether he be trying to be would he be moved this summer with that 1 year left of control on the contract. Now, what essentially he does, so this is a 3 year max extension from now, is in the third year there is a player option. So really, what it does is extends Cleveland's control for him over the next two seasons, and then he's going to have that player option up. So we could be back right back where we started from next summer already, starting to talk about is he possibly on the market. But 3 years from now is when they're expecting that next bump in salary, Gil. So everybody's kind of thinking, okay, he'll stay there for the next couple more years and then jump in on the first next big movement with the salary cap and be able to land a big deal.
Weren't you the guy that was like, he's definitely out of there after this year?
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Good for Cleveland. Does that move the needle at all? They're not cracking the top four in the East, are they?
Well, this is what's interesting about Cleveland. Also, I think Darius Garland now becomes, I would think this, but a lot of people have said this too, and this has all kind of been wrong. Either Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland, one of the two of them was probably leaving this summer. So if Mitchell's staying, is Garland now a little bit more on the open market? There's been some reports, though, that they've been a little bit more closed off talking about him with teams than expected. So maybe that opens up here, maybe it doesn't. The one thing that's tough with Cleveland as far as whether it moves the needle or not.
Guess what I'm asking, the way I ask that is, was it built in to the market that he was staying or leaving?
I don't think it moved. It did not move much. Yeah, it did not.
So it was already
much.
Built
so
in.
It was kind of built in.
Yeah.
The thing that's tough with Cleveland is they're different from a lot of other teams where a lot of these guys, if a lot of their younger guys just continue to improve, right, that's how they get better, right? Is Mobley going to take another step forward? Is Jared Allen going to take another step forward? If Darius Garland's there, does he take another step forward? I think the team's got the pieces there that they could be good. It's just we haven't really seen it, right, over the past couple years. They've been a good team in the East. They just haven't been a great team.
The other thing is Klay Thompson signing with the Dallas Mavericks. Klay Thompson signing with the Dallas Mavericks, which is, the official end. We already knew that the Warriors dynasty was over, but that marks the official end to the Warriors dynasty. I was retweeting a piece that you and I did in April when I said, if this is, in fact, the last game that Klay Thompson plays in a Warriors uniform, let's pour out a 40 for him, basically, and here's the tribute. Klay reportedly taking less money in pursuit of another championship, a guy who rarely knows seasons where he's not playing in an NBA Finals, I guess. So he's like, let me see if I can latch on to Luka and the Mavericks here. Significant for you or like just on the margins?
Fairly. I think the combination, if you look at the whole of what Dallas did so far in free agency, where you've moved Tim Hardaway, you moved Josh Green, and you're getting these pieces back in Derrick Jones Jr., which was obviously massive for them in the playoffs. Tim Hardaway Jr. was big for them in the regular season and then didn't play at all in the playoffs. I think when you're exchanging those guys for Klay Thompson, Najee Marshall, who I love coming over from the Pelicans, I think that was a great pickup. I think he might not be as great on ball defensively as what Derrick Jones Jr. brought to the table, but he's still a good defender, big, strong dude who's going to be able to play in their three and the four and guard some of those guys on the perimeter that other teams are going to throw out. I think he's a great signing. Quentin Grimes is involved in that deal, too. If Quentin Grimes gets back at all to what he looked like a couple years ago with the Knicks, overall, I think it is a pretty significant improvement from that group that they had a year ago. And, I mean, for those of us that had Mavericks tickets, how many times were you just watching three-pointers from above that break area just brick in that finals, and now it's Klay Thompson who's going to be there with all the open looks he's probably ever going to have wanted to see in his entire career with playing off of Kyrie and Luka.
Warriors, meanwhile, get D'Anthony Melton, looking for Lauri Markkanen maybe. I just want to say this about Klay, too. Klay has, four championships, four titles, six NBA Finals appearances, five All-Star games, but two of the coolest NBA records you could ever have.
Oh, totally.
14 three-pointers made in a game, which is the second coolest. Curry and a couple others have 13 made in a game, but Klay holds it at 14. And then the coolest of all time, 37 points in one quarter of basketball, which he did in the third quarter of a game against the Sacramento Kings back in 2015, the year that the Warriors won 73 games. I don't know if you've ever tried to relive that quarter, but if you look at the play-by-play, Klay doesn't take a shot for the first 2 minutes of it. In fact, I think he has a turnover, right? So it's really 37 points in 10 minutes. And for the first almost 7 minutes of that remaining 10 minutes, I think it's 6:58, he scores 19 points. So the last 3 minutes and 2 seconds of that quarter, he scores 18, which is, that's what made it so unbelievable, too. It was just, it crescendoed. It was incredible. And I don't know how, I don't know if anybody ever looked this up, but like how many times in the history of the NBA has anybody scored 18 points in 3 minutes and 2 seconds? It's probably, you can probably count it on one hand.
Well, the
unless,
other one,
of
that
course,
was,
Wilt did it a couple times.
You know, the 14 threes game, too. The other one that was weird about that is he had like, wasn't it like 11 dribbles or something? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like,
never dribbled.
It was some insane stat like that. Like, he had more threes than dribbles in the game.
Straight to the Hall of Fame, but one more pit stop in Dallas, apparently, on the way there, trying to get himself another NBA Finals appearance and then perhaps another NBA title. I have tennis picks, 5 of them still to come. Can I rattle them off real quick?
Yeah.
All right. On the ladies' side, I'm on Victoria Golubic against Julie Niemeyer. Golubic. G-O-L-U-B-I-C. She's at, got her at minus 115 last night, all at VSiN.com/picks. And Olivia Gadecki, she's a plus 165 dog against Robin Montgomery. Those are still yet to start. And then on the men's side, there are 3. Mackenzie McDonald, the American, plus 128 against Emil Roussevori. Rinky Hijikata. You know Rinky Hijikata, don't you, Kelly?
Love Rinky.
Minus 135 against Flavio Coboli. And then the over, 44.5 games in the Christopher Eubanks-Quentin Halas game, which should be a serve bot battle. Those 5, I'll run them back on the other side as well. Drew Dinsick as well. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Bar Canada at the Date, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We'll get to those NFL props coming up on the show. I just want to say the Royals July bet, Kelly. Circa closed when Circa took them down yesterday, when the month of July essentially started with 3 baseball games yesterday. The Royals were plus 650. And at Caesars, I don't know. Is it still up at Caesars? They are
so.
The short shot at 7.
Really?
Yeah. Did we do that?
That moved. Was it 17-1, right? That you bet it at?
Yes, sir. 17-1.
I typed up on that graphic. Yeah.
Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us once again at @whale_capper. The Deep Dive podcast he does with Andy Molitor, about to launch into his unbelievable NFL previews on that podcast. And then NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with the Australian-accented Jay Croucher, which makes everything sound super-duper smarter than he already is. It's Drew Dinsick joining us from Long Beach, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Men's side, there's really no headline yet. It's just kind of standard operating procedure so far on the men's side.
Yeah, I mean, the big headline is we were going to say farewell to Sir Andy Murray in singles. And not to be. He was going to kind of get his going away, you know, opportunity on center court. Withdraws, match, now gets a lucky loser. I think Murray, it sounds like, is probably still going to try to play doubles. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with him. And I definitely didn't fancy him as going to go deep into this tournament regardless, because he's just had back surgery. But all said, it is still kind of fascinating that, you know, Rafa goes out in the French and now Andy Murray is gone. And at Wimbledon, Joker is kind of the last of the kind of old guard remaining. And, you know, I think I'm kind of coming around on his draw. The bottom half looks very beatable. Q3 is sort of the by default weakest quarter because it doesn't have a center, it doesn't have an Alcaraz, it doesn't have a Djokovic. And Djokovic got, I think, a very, very fair draw, particularly early on. Like, if he was going to get tested in this tournament, it was going to be in the first couple rounds before he had his legs under him. And, you know, before he kind of knew sort of the state of his knee and what he was capable of doing. And he gets a very, very soft landing here with taking on, basically back-to-back qualifiers who have less than about a 2% chance to defeat him outright in a best-of-5 match. So he'll be there in round 3. And that's where things will get a little bit interesting. But Overall, I don't really see anyone on the bottom who has enough pedigree, enough quality to get the better of him on grass. The breakout player so far for me, at least eyeball test, has been the Frenchman who came through as a lucky loser, Giovanni Tesci Pericard. Holy smokes. He has one of the most dynamite serves that you will ever come across. So far right now, he's up 2-1 in a fourth set breaker against Seb Korda. He has 40 aces. His first serve percentage, points won, 84%. Like he is just absolutely dynamite. And Korda has so far produced 11 break chances and converted zero of them, because basically, like, Pericard's doing this thing where, you know, when you have confidence in your serve and you're like, okay, well, first was a fault. I'm going to take a little bit off this second serve. Not Pericard. Like, he's out there bombing 140 on his second serves. And I don't know that I've counted as many second serve aces as I've seen in this match so far this morning. So very, very cool to see him kind of show up, because he is just shooting up the rankings right now. He is having a magnificent spring. Just in general is kind of has exactly the right mindset to be a problem in that portion of the draw. So yeah, excited to see what Jack Draper looks like, if the nerves are going to be tough for him now that he's sort of carrying the weight of expectation of the UK. I think in general, Sinner took care of business yesterday. He's got a tough test against Berrettini tomorrow. And I think in general, that's going to be a fascinating match to watch, because Sinner had some wobbles yesterday, and I thought he was going to be the best player in this tournament. I thought he was kind of exactly primed to break out on grass, because, you know, remember 2 years ago, he gave a very informed Djokovic a very real test in, I believe, the quarterfinals, and took him to, a fifth set. With the level he was able to produce, and Sinner is now a much better player than he was then. So I kind of had assumed that this championship went through Yannick Sinner, but again, yesterday was not a super impressed with what we saw, even though he was up against a real opponent. Just in general, like, his path is not easy here. So I think Alcaraz is still a bet against for me, but and just that's more of along the lines of having not seen the form from him so far this year that he carried through last year to the championship. But this probably comes down to the big three and winner of Sinner, Alcaraz taking down Joker.
Yeah, Yannick Hanfmann, a 35-year-old, took a set off and covered the game spread against Sinner yesterday. All right, NBA, anything happened so far free agency wise, and we'll throw in the draft as well, that has triggered anything for you bet wise, thought wise, anything?
Not really. I would say that I agree with the market move on the Sixers being the second choice in the East. But at the same time, if you were betting your hard-earned dollars in the month of July on the Sixers, you are putting putting your hopes and dreams in the health of Joel Embiid's knees, which is a bad bet in my experience. So if you want to have some Sixers exposure, I'm fine waiting until April. And I think in general, there's no one in the East that has done much to really kind of move the needle for me. I thought the price that the Knicks paid to get Mikal Bridges was hilariously bad. I know that, like, a lot of those first round picks are just going to be in the high 20s, and they have a good enough young core that they're going to be good for all of those years that they're giving up their first to the Brooklyn Nets. But I don't rate Mikal Bridges even close to the compensation that they gave up for him. I was a little surprised at some of the moves in the West. I don't think anyone's gotten better besides the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the biggest move for the Oklahoma City Thunder was bringing in Alex Caruso. They obviously spent some money on, Hartenstein, who's good. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, that's a fun piece, but they have now a potential closing five on defense that looks extremely dynamic and very, very good. I don't see a weakness now on the defensive side of the ball, and the Thunder should be able to basically win with defense next year, and I would make them the favorites in the West as currently rostered. And everybody else looks to have taken a step backwards. Nuggets take a step backwards. Timberwolves not really doing anything is surprising. I thought Dallas got, maybe it got worse. They have now more defensive questions within the absence of Derek Jones Jr. I think in general, LA Clippers down, Phoenix Suns nothing. The West, which looked like a gauntlet on paper, particularly last year in the playoffs, as you looked across the quality of teams that made it into the final eight, now it looks like it's taking a step back to me. So, if the Celtics aren't fairly priced to win the title, considering that I think they have at least a 50% chance to win the East, I think that's the bet to be made.
And Jason Tatum just signing a new deal where he's making over $50 million a year. $50 million. Not bad if you can get it. All right. Last
big number.
Big number. $50 million here, $50 million there. All of a sudden, it's real money. All right, last 2 minutes here. Last week, you came on the show. You were kind enough to give us, and I think I'm counting this right, 47 different Olympics bets. Do you have anything, any Olympics thoughts of the moment as we approach the Olympic Games here later this month?
I watched, so we can follow up the swimming commentary with a little thoughts of track and field and gymnastics, which I watched this last weekend. A little up and down for us on the track as far as kind of qualifying goes. We had a couple expected performers who I had kind of softly penciled in for gold, like Aething Liu in the 800 for the women, who did not qualify because she tripped and fell in the final race. In general, like outside of Sydney McLaughlin, I wasn't especially impressed with any of the runs from any of the men or women. I think our men sprinters in general, looking at the market, are a little overrated coming into this one. So I'm kind of bracing for disappointment out of Team USA on the athletics.
Wow.
In week two. And then the opposite for gymnastics. Our women's gymnastics program, you'll remember from Tokyo, Simone Biles was expected to win 5 gold medals, but she got the twisties, Gil.
She did.
And the derailed her efforts in the 2020 Olympics. And I got to tell you, her qualifying up in Minnesota was dynamite. She was as good as her peak performances in vault, in floor, and close in balance beam. So that launches Team USA to very likely gold for the team. It launches her to likely gold for individual all around. And she should win gold in, I think she will win gold in vault, probably floor and beam as well. So she's back in the 4 to 5 gold medal territory, which would be huge because Team USA's over 39.5 gold medals is staring at me.
Will they put up a world record prop for McLaughlin, probably?
Oh, without question.
Without question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would take yes on that because she looked like she had more to go.
We got steeplechase.
That's next week. We got twisties and yips in two consecutive segments. Well done, Drew. Thank you.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by DraftKings here at Bar Canada at the D, downtown Las Vegas. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, if you could do a PSA promo, not a PSA, but a promo for Bar Canada at the D. Well, what would you say? What would you say to the fine people?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, some of the best video poker pay tables in town. So if you're into that, you should get on down here. And if you're
preferably the one right behind Kelly.
Right. Yeah. During the show, right behind me, just shove aside the red ropes like a lot of people do. You just light up a cigar and sit right behind me and blow smoke in my general direction. That's always nice. It's always nice to have during the show. I don't like these are the spots that I love to watch games. Get me in front of a video poker machine with all these TVs that Bar Canada has. Fire it up. I could sit there for hours.
You love nursing a drink and playing yourself some video poker.
I do.
That's your thing.
Yeah, very much so.
I like it. All right. You want to do more NFL or are we waiting on Paul?
We're waiting on Paul, so we're going to do some more NFL.
Let's do some more NFL. Okay. So
technical difficulties.
It happens. So here's the deal. So before we were talking about these great props that Kelly discovered over at DraftKings, and it's always good to dive into a DraftKings app because there are so many different things to bet. We talked about this before baseball season. That's how I discovered the monthly bets DraftKings has this. I wonder if anybody here has this. Thank goodness DraftKings did in March, April, because otherwise I never would have discovered it here. I never would have occurred to me. And then DraftKings since hasn't done it, but thank God that they did. And now in the NFL season, They have tons of stuff, including the drive for week five. It's really through week five matchups of NFL teams, with a tie thrown in there as well. So Kelly talked about a couple he liked. We both matched on the Commanders over the Patriots. Commanders minus 135 to me is a very bettable price. The other one that I loved, and I like a bunch of them, right? We can get in some of these others too. But the other one that I loved was the Browns are matched up against the Steelers. Now, I loved this one so much, Kelly, that it made me think about other bets too. So Cleveland, this is what Cleveland has, first five. Dallas at Jacksonville. Then they have the Giants at the Raiders at Washington. So Dallas at home at Jacksonville. Okay. But then Giants at home, Raiders on the road, Washington on the road. So two that, you know, the common person would think are difficult, three not so difficult. Here's what Pittsburgh has. Now, remember, the Pittsburgh Steelers, famously, and we've all said this, not just here on this show, but everybody on this network, everybody in mainstream media, the way that the Pittsburgh Steelers close their season is the hardest gauntlet of games you will ever see on any team schedule, the way that the Steelers close. Well, guess what? As we pointed out at the time, too, their opening to the schedule ain't that easy either. Here's what Pittsburgh has to start the season. At Atlanta, at Denver in the elevation, Kelly. Oh, you might call it altitude, not me. At Atlanta, at Denver. Then Chargers at home, at Indianapolis, Dallas at home. Good God. Cleveland is a plus 105 proposition here. Pittsburgh plus 150. The Ties plus 280. Give me the Brownies at plus 105. Are you kidding me? They got a Giants, a Raiders, and a Skins game in there. Pittsburgh has literally zero gimmies. Even if you think Denver stinks, it's still into elevation. Browns plus 105. In fact, this got me thinking about how in sports betting, you know, it's often good to be contrarian to the common opinion. When we have a college basketball play that, like, different hosts on the network love,
yeah,
and nobody else loves the other side, we always sort of say, oh boy, you know what that means. On the Megapod, if three of us land on a certain team, we always say to each other out loud, we're like, oh no, if three of us have it, it's a definite loser. Just this week alone, like I was talking about the Royals with July wins and how it's contrarian thinking to take a team like I did with the Astros in June of a team that has some of the fewest games scheduled in a given month and trying to bet them most wins, but I explained why. There are other things. People love the Eagles. I don't love them so much. So it's good to be contrarian. But every once in a while, something comes along in sports and in sports betting where you're like, not only is it a consensus opinion, but it is so ridiculously right that you just have to go with it. And that is the Steelers and the season win total under, which I've already bet once, Kelly, right when it came out. But as we're going through this prop, and I like the Browns plus 105 and the drive for five against the Steelers, again, it triggered the Steelers thing where I'm like, how in the hell, can I use that word? Is that allowed? How can this team come close to their season win total?
Yeah.
How? So 7.5 is an alternate season win under. I'm betting that next. I may bet it right here, right now,
yeah,
on the Steelers.
I bet the 8.5 pretty heavy earlier in the year. I'm with you, though. This is... Yeah, you know, but Gil, come on.
I know what you're about to say. I
mean, you know we have to say it.
But is that...
He's never had a losing season, Gil. How could you possibly make that bet?
Is that artificially propping this up?
I would hope not. I don't think so.
That would be crazy, right?
It would be crazy. That would be crazy.
Because if you look back on, like, Mike Tomlin's seasons, right...
I've been on the under the past three years? I don't even know.
But think about this. So, like, there's some 8-8s in there, and there's a 9-8 in there. Don't correct me if I'm wrong. If you go back into those seasons, there are games where, like, they miraculously won or they figured out a way to win. And so if that just changes, right, and they have one season in there where they don't have the non-losing season, none of us are ever mentioning this. And none of this matters. So that think how it was like that Triple Crown thing we used to talk about. Oh, my God, it's been 37 years since a horse has won the Triple Crown, since Affirmed won it in 1978. And so we say this so much and so much that it becomes this thing that actually, like, all it takes is one extra level of thinking, like we just did with Tomlin and how he got to all his records. If you actually look back at Triple Crown races, there were so many near misses. Like, the fact that it didn't happen didn't mean that it was likely to continue happening. Now, I know it's not, it doesn't happen every year, but that's not because that it's something that a horse can't achieve if the right horse comes along, and American Pharoah broke that streak. But, and we've had one since. So I just, Justified also won a Triple Crown, if I'm not mistaken. So, point being, this is just one of these things. The Steelers schedule to me is one of these things, and the season win total under is one of these rare things in sports. Now, if I end up being wrong and Mike Tomlin ends up having a non-losing season again, my God, not only am I tipping the cap, yeah, I'm taking Kelly's cap and I'm tipping that one too.
I've been wrong about it for I don't know how many years in a row now.
But this to me seems like one of the rare things that comes along in sports betting. Not rare, but like once in a while, yeah, it comes by where you're like, no, everybody's actually right about this. They cannot possibly get to it.
I would think that too. And going back to the drive for week five, I like your bet. That was one that I looked at as well. I have my questions about.
I forgot that's how we started.
I have my questions about Cleveland offensively still. Like that, it's just like I've been the guy who the past couple years on the other side of it, right? Like not only have I been wrong about the Steelers, I've been wrong about the Browns for the most part too, because I thought Deshaun Watson was going to be so much better than he has been.
Well, he's only played 11 games.
It's wild. I know it's
for
wild
them in two seasons.
I just the part I don't get, like I can't get on board anymore with what a lot of people seem to be, it is like that this is the year that he's. And I'm like, how many more years is going to be? This is going to be the year where Deshaun Watson, you know, comes out and looks great. I mean, I really think this is maybe the last year you can really say something like that before we have to move on. Because of all the injuries, you can at least say that, you know, we haven't seen as much of him as we should.
Brownie's 7-4 in those 11 games.
I think I like your bet actually better than my Dolphins one simply because of the price.
Are they plus money?
Yeah, I think the wins are probably about the same. Like, I have some questions about.
I don't.
No, I'm talking of like compared to the Dolphins schedule with the Browns, but I'm laying -140 compared to your +105. Yeah. So I actually think yours is probably a little bit better. There's some teams though. Like, I mean, gosh, where we're at right now in the offseason with the Dallas Cowboys, like, you have any idea what to expect out of that team week one?
Wyatt and I were talking about this, not just Wyatt and I, but we had Zach on talking NFC East with us last week when the guide came out. And my whole thing is, while I am down, just talking NFC East, while I am down on the Eagles compared to others, I did concede that the Eagles could end up winning the division by, the word I used was the political convention word they use, which is by acclamation. Like everybody else is just going to bow out. And Dallas, the thing is with Dallas is Jerry Jones all of a sudden doesn't want to pay anybody.
Yep.
He's like, no, Jerry finally figured it out that maybe the approach he's been taking all these years is off. So he's like not paying anybody at the current moment. And I just wonder if Dallas starts poorly or has a bad first half of the season, does it become this, and we'll never know this publicly probably. Maybe we will, but most likely we won't. If there's this sort of like internal insurrection where they're like, and he's not paying us.
I think that's absolutely possible. So that's part of my, that's fine. You don't like the Eagles? That's fine. I like the Eagles, but that is part of the.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Like, I haven't made a bet on them yet. No, but I'm going to make a division bet on them. I don't really know what I'm waiting for at this point.
But part and parcel with what I'm just saying, so even if the Eagles do win the NFC East by default, are most people still think they're either the best or the second best team in the NFC?
Second best. I couldn't put them above San Francisco.
Well, okay. I think there are some, but what I'm saying is, I think there is a school of thought where they are not even a top four. They're not even a top three team. Like that, San Francisco, Detroit, and Green Bay might end up being better than that.
I can't push back on that today. I think there's still way too many unknowns for me personally on Green Bay and the Rams for how excited people are about both of those teams. Like I
didn't say the Rams.
I know you didn't. But yeah, those are the two teams that I feel like everybody's getting real excited about that I'm like, I'm going to wait and see a little bit here. The Rams kind of took that step forward. I thought they would last year, but even more than I expected. I don't know if they can replicate that again and even continue to get better this next season.
Again, shout out
to the Packers. Absolutely, they could.
Shout out to DraftKings for these Drive for Week 5s. We could actually go through more of these. I don't like as much, but I like. And we're efforting Paul Carr as well.
Yeah, we got Paul coming up next.
Paul's next. Well, like I said, soccer on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game live from Bar Canada at the D, lovely D, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, it's A Numbers Game. Did you see, Kelly, that the Astros, they won yesterday, but they didn't get their first hit till the fifth inning because clearly the June celebration, they probably were partying late into the night.
That's right.
And, you know, they just weren't ready to go when
as
the game
one
started.
Does when, as, you...
when you win a June championship, that's what you do. Paul Spohr joins us from Austin, Texas, where Kelly was just at. Did you call Paul Spohr when you were there?
I did not call Paul Spohr. No, I did not.
Courtesy of the progressive.
Great time, though. Great
courtesy
time.
The progressive guest.
As long as they had a good time, there's lots to do. It's no big deal. And I'm a homebody anyway, let's be honest. I wouldn't have gone out.
Paul wearing a Florida Marlins cap and a Pink Panther shirt today. That's what we got going on here. Wait, because people were asking this on Twitter. What was your favorite? Did you have a favorite food, a favorite restaurant that you went to in Austin while you were there?
I got a lot of barbecue questions. I was only there for, I guess I was there 5 days. So I only did barbecue once. It was on the second day. We went to L.A. Barbecue, Leanne's Barbecue, Paul.
Sure.
Was amazing.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Yeah. It was some of the best barbecue I've ever had in my life. Thankfully, we also had the Uber driver on the way there.
Yeah.
Where I'm sure you guys have run into this. The Uber driver who knows the historical background of anything you want to know about in the city. So, like, it's kind of comical and annoying, but also was extremely helpful. Where he's like, so this is what happened with the barbecue. Like, Leanne left whatever in Houston. Came
in
down to Austin.
1878.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I had an Uber driver in San Francisco the other day that we in the freeway when you go into the city from the south, from the airport,
yeah.
There's a spot in the traffic, everybody knows this, on the 101 where it grinds to a halt. And you know what he started doing, which wasn't annoying at all? You know how the race car drivers thing when they wave the yellow flag and they start turning back and forth like this?
Gee.
He was doing that in the middle of the freeway. I was like, what are you doing? Anyway, Paul Spohr is here from Austin. Paul, I don't know if you know this. So we've been betting on this show. I've been betting
these, on this show.
That wasn't the end of the sentence. These monthly Major League Baseball markets of most wins. And I don't know in the history of this show if we've gotten as much traction on anything else, more traction on anything else than we have on this. Maybe as much, but not more. And it just has made baseball so fun. Like when it's so easy to drift in a normal, you know, a 162 game schedule, mm-hmm. if you're not constantly locked in with a bet, some of us who are not like as deep into baseball as you, we get super locked into these things. And I'm just wondering, man, there's got to be ways beyond betting for baseball to make this interesting in an NBA kind of way where they do like in-game, you know, they're doing in-season stuff in basketball. And I wonder if Rob Manfred, I even hate that I'm even suggesting this, because it's like I love the purity of baseball and I hate some of the rule changes. But, man, some of this might be interesting for, you know, growing the sport. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be interested in it. Like, yes, you're not wrong. Again, the sigh and the somber tone is because of who's in charge and some of the things that we've seen come out of that group thus far. But, yeah, I mean, I actually used to play in a fantasy league that not only had the prize for the whole year, but each month. Every month, the winner was fighting for something. So you could have the most wretched season ever but win September because you picked up 3 call-ups. And get your money back, right? Like, so there's something to play for. And that's one of the bigger problems of fantasy baseball. You know, it obviously doesn't hold a candle to football in terms of popularity because of the ease of football. It's one day a week. It's just not that hard. And I'm not saying that to besmirch fantasy football. I play it. I enjoy it. But it's very easy. And that's why it's so popular. Baseball does need more things. Obviously, DFS fills some hole there. But what you've been talking about, like with these, you know, picking Cleveland, then Houston as your monthly champions, it's a lot of fun. I do like kind of breaking the season down a bit more. Heck, even with my rankings these days, my starting pitcher rankings, I like breaking it down instead of saying like rest of season. What are your rest of season rankings in May? I don't know because I have no idea what's going to happen. Why try to be that precise? Here's my next 4 weeks of rankings. So even just breaking things down in general in baseball makes it more digestible in general. So I'm not surprised that you're finding success with that with your shorter term bets.
All right. I'm going to ask you a bunch of impossible questions to answer then. Just based on with that backdrop, now I'm going to ask you impossible questions.
Can't wait.
Every division, so 4 out of the 6 divisions, second place team is 6 games or more behind the first place team. The only divisions that are closer, Houston's 3 games behind the Mariners and the AL West, and the Orioles and Yankees are in a basically a de facto tie, difference of percentage points. how many actual great division races will we have down the stretch of September?
So how many more than the two that they're shaping up the East and the West?
No, including those. Like, will those still be?
I think those will hold. Okay. I think Orioles-Yankees will remain a great battle. I think, you know, I talked last week about the other Texas team, the Rangers, me thinking that they could come into the mix, too. They didn't go out and have the best week after that, but I'm not terribly concerned there. I still think both Texas teams can give the Mariners a lot to handle because the Mariners hitting just doesn't impress me. Now, pitching can paper over a lot of issues, and that's what they've done this year. The Mariners have, but I don't know that they're going to be able to fend off these two Texas teams. Obviously, chief among them right now is Houston. And then I still think there's a path for Atlanta to get close to Philly despite some of the struggles and injuries they've had, right? They've lost two of the greatest players in baseball in Strider and Acuna. So the fact that they're only eight out is a bit of an achievement in a weird way. They're still a deep team. They still have a motivated general manager who's very sharp, but they need to clean up that lineup. They are running a half lineup right now in Atlanta. And it kind of started even before the Acuna injury, but then you take him out because we were always expecting him to get better. So even when he wasn't full Acuna, it's like, well, he's going to come on. Now he ain't coming. Like, the cavalry is not coming with Acuna. They need some improvement offensively, but they can give the Phillies some hell there. And I like that Phillies team. It's more than I also like Atlanta's team and their willingness to push. So I think we end up with 3 to 4 division races that are actually intriguing.
Mm. Atlanta, by the way, 8 games behind the Phillies currently as we are around the halfway mark of the Major League Baseball season. 3.5 games clear of not being in the playoffs at all, it should be mentioned, in the playoff picture currently, the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. You, for those who have not known you forever, which I have had the pleasure of knowing you forever, you first started by doing these unbelievable starting pitching guides, which were guys that were going to be on the major league roster. They were pitchers in the minor leagues, you know, the farm system. It was just unbelievable. I was like, who is this kid? This is incredible.
I want to know who that kid is, too.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
I don't think I could do it again.
Yeah. And if I say the same thing about certain things I did, that is so interesting. But you're all about pitching. That is where you made your hay. Right now, AL Cy Young, NL Cy Young, who you think is the best right now, who you think with your sort of projections of these pitchers, who do you think might be worth a bet?
You know, I think it's Glasnow and Skubal right now that jump out to me as the guys I like as the favorites. You know, Crochet's been unbelievable. What kind of innings is he going to face? Is Hauk going to get any sort of innings hold back there? I don't think they should necessarily or have to, because first off, those things don't work. And the Pirates were great to come out the other day and basically acknowledge that they kind of botched it with Ronzi Contreras, who's not even in their org anymore. And so they're not going to do a hard shutdown with Skeens and Jared Jones. Could Skeens get into the Cy picture? I mean, he could, but I don't think I want to bet that. I think there's just too much of an uphill battle for him. And with Hauk, he is 28 years old. Like, how much do you really have to baby him? So I think those guys are very much in the mix. But if I'm betting right now, it's really tough because those guys are kind of favorites. I still love Corbin Burns. I can't ever get away from him. I know his Ks aren't there right now. And when you're picking nits, you do have to kind of get in there and start to be harsh on guys, even when it's not the biggest issue. But I think that's the nit that you could pick with Corbin Burns. But if he turns the Ks up, the wins could be through the roof. And we know that that doesn't mean that they're better just because they have more wins in the win-loss column. But the voters, there are still contingents of voters that care about it. Another thing is, we don't know which voters will be voting on the Cy Young. So we don't know which ones are narrative-driven based on things like that. So I think some of those guys on the contenders, obviously you have to keep Wheeler in the mix. Even Nola, he can make a run too. Think about the great second halves that we've had, though, from guys that where they've won the Cy Young. I think what you really need to be looking at, not just the favorites, is looking for the guys that could make those pivotal moves. I would look at those Seattle pitchers, any of the three. I don't know that I have a firm lean. Pick one of your favorites there and figure out who you think could make a big summer move. Start mapping out some of the expected schedule. It'll change. It'll get disrupted. But what could set up for guys? So I think you really want to get in and start to look and see who could create that crazy narrative down the second half stretch and not just go for the favorites.
Yeah, Luis Castillo, by the way, 30-1, speaking of Seattle pitchers. Logan Gilbert, 12-1, pardon me. 12-1.
Where's Kirby?
Kirby, I'm going to have to look a little deeper on
Kirby. Because
he's
my favorite pitcher
Kirby's,
on that team.
Kirby's 40-1.
So there you go. You kind of, I like one of the longer shots, too. I've actually been a Gilbert guy because I feel like he's always gotten a little bit shorter shrift compared to the other two. But he's the one having the breakout right now, the huge season Gilbert. So he's the short shot. I like Kirby or Castillo at their prices because they're just as good as he is.
Yeah. If it ends up being Tanner Houck, by the way, I'm going to hate myself because when I had the Guardians bet in March, April, and it was one of those rare games that month where the Guardians got completely stifled. He was unbelievable, and I actually said on the show, I'm like, wow, Tanner Houck, and I believe the consensus was, oh, he won't get enough innings. But
kind of a righty Chris Sale, but at 28, I don't think they need to hold him. I think he could get 180 innings, and that's all you need to do it this year,
yeah,
these days.
15-1 currently. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
Paul Spohr, everybody. More NFL next.